You're listening to a Black Mask podcast from blackmask.ca.
Author of The Black Book on Canadian Foreign Policy, Black Mask reached Yves Engler by telephone. Why did you write this book?
The book really comes out of my role in the Haiti Solidarity Movement, struggling against Canada's role in overthrowing Haiti's elected government in 2004, then Ottawa's support for this brutal dictatorship that killed thousands of people, more than 25-month dictatorship. And coming out of this Haiti Solidarity Movement, I wondered, when the worst of the political repression subsided in Haiti, I decided to start investigating whether Canada had acted or acts in a similar way elsewhere. So I really, after this, participating in the Haiti Solidarity Movement, where I really kind of was taken aback by the extent to which Canada supported this coup in Haiti. I guess I was a little bit naive about Canada's role in the world before learning about Canada's role in Haiti, where I thought that, you know, I had an understanding that there was a process of dispossession of First Nations people within Canada, and that there was class structure within Canadian society. But I didn't think that our government acted or acts in the same way on the world scene that Washington does. And when it comes and it came to Haiti, I was really sort of taken aback to the extent that Canada acted as a sort of imperial bully. So the second reason for looking into writing this book is because while participating in the Haiti Solidarity Movement, I found that a lot of Canadians had a hard time believing what we were saying, believing that the situation was as bad as we were saying. And so when we told them that, tell people that the Canadian International Development Agency was financing a highly partisan so-called Haitian human rights organization that was responsible for the imprisonment of Haiti's constitutional prime minister, Haiti's constitutional interior minister. When we tell Canadians that the Canadian International Development Agency was really choosing sides and choosing the most reactionary forces within Haitian society to support the most reactionary forces within Haitian society, I found that lots of people would have a hard time believing that kind of stuff. And so I think I sort of learned a little bit about this idea of the mythology of Canadian foreign policy and how Canadians see their country. And Canadians actually have the highest self-appraisal of their country's role in the world, with as many as 9 in 10, according to a number of studies, as many as 9 in 10 Canadians believing that Canada is a force for good in the world. So part of the aim of this book was really to take on, to challenge that mythology of Canada as just a benevolent force in the world.
I've definitely found that in the past as well, just being in Canada's society, being in Winnipeg society. It's definitely a common pervasive attitude that I've found, and very interested that you're raising all these issues and creating awareness about it, because I really think that we need it, especially to shatter the false image that we have of ourselves in Canada. Could you describe Canada's role in Latin America?
Yeah, well, I think that Canada's long been a major economic player in Latin America. Braskem, otherwise known as Brazilian Traction, was the biggest corporation in Latin America for decades, from the early 1920s until was among the biggest corporations in Latin America until the early 1960s, employed 50,000 Brazilians. Toronto-based company that actually played a certain role in the 1964 coup d'etat against João Goulart, sort of social democratic president in Brazil. Canadian mining companies like Inco were major players in Guatemala in the 60s, 70s. Canadian tramway companies and banks played a big role in Mexico in the lead up to the Mexican Revolution, and really sided with foreign intervention during the Mexican Revolution of 1910 to 1917. And Canadian political officials had, Prime Minister Borden in the mid-1910s, a vision of Canadian empire in Central America. So Canadian corporations have long played a major role in Latin America. Today, Canadian mine companies have more than 1,400 concessions across Latin America. Canadian banks are major players, and more than $100 billion in Canadian investments in Latin America. And Canadian diplomacy has really played a role in advancing Canadian corporate interests. And as an example, in 1917, the Royal Bank lent Costa Rican President Federico Tinoco $200,000 just as he was about to flee office. There was mass protests in the country calling for his ouster. The Royal Bank loaned him this money, and the new government that took office refused to repay this debt because Tinoco, when leaving office, he took the money with him. The new government considered an odious debt that the Royal Bank never should have made the loan, knowing that Tinoco was probably going to flee with the money. Ottawa's response was that in 1921 sent three Canadian gunboats, Canadian military vessels, off the coast of Costa Rica to to pressure the Costa Rican government to negotiate with the Royal Bank and to actually help the Royal Bank satisfactorily negotiate this outstanding claim with the Costa Rican government. And there's a long history, starting with the 1915 and the Mexican Revolution, of Canadian military vessels, or gunboats, being used in Latin America, particularly in Central America, to advance Canadian interests, sometimes particular corporate interests, and other interests, in other instances, sort of more broad imperial interests. But Canada's really had a major role in Latin America for maybe 100 years or more.
Black Mask interviewed Justin Potter in February, and he said that it doesn't matter whether Canada is a subjugated tool of the U.S. to advance its global interests, or whether it should be seen as an imperialist country in its own right, and in fact, that we don't know, because Canadian foreign policy always matches the U.S. interests. Would you agree with that, or disagree?
No, I would actually slightly disagree with Justin on that. I don't think that Canadian foreign policy always matches U.S. interests. I think that the day-to-day Canadian diplomacy in Ecuador, in Guatemala, that's really about advancing Canadian corporate interests. It's not antagonistic to American foreign policy, but it's not American foreign policy. The American government would prefer if it was American companies that had those interests and that were benefiting. I think that Justin's correct in the sense that there's maybe, with the exception of the English Caribbean, there's nowhere in the world where Canadian foreign policy is heavily antagonistic to U.S. foreign policy, that usually the two countries are aligned in their vision of how to run the world or how the world should be run. I think Justin would agree with that there is a Canadian corporate capitalist class that benefits from empire, American empire today, and historically British empire, and that's why Canadian foreign policy has been heavily aligned with empire, American empire today, historically British empire, not because the Brits or Washington today forces Canada into supporting their imperial project, but because there's a class within Canadian society that sees their interests as being served by expanding this American empire.
America's foreign policy is well known. Why do you think Canada has this image of being the good cop?
Well, one reason is because Canada has played the good cop to the American bad cop on a number of occasions in foreign policy. I'll answer it in two different parts. One, I think that the fact that Canada never formally had colonies is part of the explanation for why. If you don't consider the domestic colonialism against First Nations people, which we of course should, if you take that aside, Canada never formally had colonies, unlike many other countries. The U.S., I guess, technically didn't formally have colonies, but it occupied countries in a way that, for any serious observer, was a colonial relationship. But Canada has played, really taken on this sort of good cop role, and I think the most infamous, but for me it's sort of infamous or illustration of that, is the establishment of peacekeeping. Lester Pearson, a big part of the mythology of Canada, and what that was the UK, French, and Israelis invaded Egypt in 1956, so-called Suez Crisis, and Ottawa, Lester Pearson, supported this peacekeeping mission not as a way to defend Egyptian civilians or to protect Egyptian sovereignty, but supported this UN mission and its establishment of peacekeeping as a way to advance U.S. geopolitical aims in the Middle East. Washington opposed the British, French, Israeli invasion. Two reasons. One, because it was wanted to tell the British and French that they were no longer the major players in the Middle East. There was a new power in the Middle East, and that was, of course, Washington. And two, Washington was nervous that the invasion would add to Moscow's prestige among Arab governments. So peacekeeping, Lester Pearson's Nobel Peace Prize, it was really the intent, the motivation for this mission was to defend Washington's geopolitical interests. And that's now been sort of mythologized into some sort of benevolent, high-minded sounding military engagement, when in fact it was really about Cold War geopolitics. So I think that the Canadian government has done a very good job. Lester Pearson today, people like Michael Ignatieff, Lloyd Axworthy, a very good job of promoting high-minded sounding policy that ultimately serves Western imperial interests. So today you have something like the responsibility to protect doctrine, which Canada has been pushing at the United Nations, and basically it's a high-minded sounding cover for imperialism. And actually the Canadian intervention intervention into Haiti was justified under the guise of the responsibility to protect. And the idea is that when there's a country that, or there's mass human rights violations in the country, when there's a failed state, it's the responsibility of the international community to intervene. And in the case of Haiti, the tangible application of the doctrine was Canadian, American, French troops overthrowing the country's elected government and supporting a brutal dictatorship, all under the guise of this high-minded sounding responsibility to protect doctrine. So I think that Canadian officials have played it very consciously. Canadian foreign policy establishment has consciously taken on initiatives within the international sphere that do the bidding of Washington, but do it under the guise of very sort of positive sounding doctrines or ideologies.
Seems to be a recurring theme among American and Canadian foreign policy is that they try to pass it off like it's a benevolent force when, you know, they're not really spreading freedom. Can you list the top 10 things that Canadians don't know about their own foreign policy?
Yeah, well, I have a list of 10 things that I think Canadians should know that will help us better understand what this country does in the world. The first one is that since 1915, which we mentioned earlier, Canadian gunboats have been sent to the Caribbean and Central America on numerous occasions. Number 9, that Canada is the 5th or 6th biggest player in the U.S. war on Iraq. Number 8, that Canadian political leaders tried to annex the British Caribbean colonies after the First World War, so they actually tried to take over the British Caribbean colonies. Number 7, that the Canadian government, in a variety of ways, supported the coup d'etat by Augusto Pinochet against Salvador Allende in Chile in 1973. Number 6, that Canadian aid has gone to rewriting countries' mining regulations in the interests of foreign investors, with 60% of the world's mining companies based in Canada. Of course, that's Canadian investors that have been the main beneficiaries. Number 5, that Canada had a couple hundred nuclear weapons at its disposal. Canadian fighter jets had nuclear weapons at their disposal based in Germany throughout the early 60s. Number 4, that Canada didn't cut off relations with Cuba after the Cuban Revolution, partly because Ottawa wanted Canada to spy on Cuba for it, which Ottawa has done since then. Number 3, that Canadian companies until the late 70s and Canadian diplomacy after that went to support or were supporting apartheid South Africa. Number 2, that Canadian UN peacekeepers, Canadian through the UN mission, Canadian peacekeepers participated in the deposition and actually ultimately killing of Patrice Lumumba, the Congo's independence leader. And number 1, that many commentators, including Noam Chomsky, consider Lester Pearson a war criminal. So it's a top 10 list of things that I think people should know about Canadian foreign policy that we don't know about. And when I speak in Winnipeg, I'll go into more detail on the specifics of those 10 points.
Well, thank you very much, Yves Zengler, for speaking to us here at Black Mask.
I hope that people come out to the event on June 11th in Winnipeg.
As do I.
Thanks.
Good talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ed. Take care.
Yves Zengler will be speaking at Mondragon Cafe and Bookstore on Thursday, June 11th at 7 p.m. His book is entitled The Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy. The talk is entitled Canada on the World Stage, A Force for Good or Bad Actor?